This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:05 on Wednesday, the 23rd of February. I'm Shazana Mokhtar together with Wong Xiaoning. But first, as we always do, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
It's a sea of red. Just red. There's no market up. Because the Dow is down 1.4%, S&P 500 down 1%, NASDAQ down 1.2%. Meanwhile, the Nikkei was down 1.7%. Hang Seng did very badly. It was down 2.7%. Shanghai and Straits Times Index in Singapore both down about 1%, while our very own FBM KLCI was down 0.4%.
Not surprising given what's happening on the geopolitical front, but where are markets headed this next? We have on the line with us Robert Mann, Head of Asian Equities at Nikko Asset Management. Robert, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. So with the Fed about to start a tightening cycle, what are the implications for Asian equity markets? Do you see this as a normal Fed tightening cycle that we can use history as a guide, or is this time different?
Well, good morning and thanks for the question. So the market at the moment is expecting about 5 or 6 rate rises by the Fed. Clearly moving around day to day as developments happen on inflation, but at the moment, obviously, in Ukraine. That when you stand back from it, though, we've got really strong growth. We've got high CPI, and we're currently at zero rates, and the Fed's still buying bonds. So this is a pretty strange environment to have rates as low as they are. The Fed is really trusted, which is giving them time. I think that we're going to have to finish up a lot higher than the 2% that the market is currently pricing in, is where the Fed will finish sort of in sometime early next year. So the question I have really is, will the Fed go more quickly than the market expects, or will they keep going into 23? And at this stage, I think it's more likely the latter. That what we're really seeing in the West is inflationary pressures. There's transitory ones, which everyone knows about and will disappear. But I think there's now a lack of workers showing up in the West. And I think it's mainly due to the baby boomers taking early retirement after COVID. They've also had really strong increases in their equity markets, equity portfolios, as well as in the housing. So why work? That this has been a longer-term issue, obviously, as people retire. And that what the West has been doing has been automating, has been letting in immigrants, has been outsourcing to Asia. And clearly COVID stopped the immigration, automation is continuing, and the outsourcing to Asia, in my view, is going to need to continue. So that will be good for China, for ASEAN, and for India. The whole inflation story is much more of a US story because we don't have the issues that the US has with sort of nearly as badly on the aging workforce area. We have some pressures. So I think that Asian central banks will need to raise rates a lot less than the Fed. I think the Fed needs to go more than the market is thinking, and that's an environment where Asia can outperform, which is pretty unusual in a rate rising environment. The absolute whether it's outperforming in a down market or an up market is more difficult, but I would have thought that we've had a fair correction already so far this year.
Okay, and Robert, I want to talk about these high-growth U.S. companies, particularly those with no earnings. You could see, really, their share prices come under pressure recently. Do you see a similar trend for such companies in Asia?
Yes, you're right. They've really corrected a lot. And I think that's what's sort of interesting is that the correction in some ways is not because the market sees a recession. It's a valuation correction, which was needed because we were starting from just some crazy levels in some cases. Asia had some pockets of that. It was not nearly as widespread as the US. Clearly, we underperformed last year. Some of those in Asia have corrected, which is good. There's still a few pockets left. So I think those ones that haven't corrected yet are the ones to be most cautious about going forward. And they probably, there's more of those in India than in most of the rest of the Asian markets.
So if we take a look at the U.S. equity market, I mean, it unexpectedly weakened in January when bond yields rose, which was unusual. Are you expecting bonds and equities to move in tandem or diverge? And what does this mean for investors?
Yeah, no, this is one of the most important questions that over the last 10, 20 years, we've had a situation where when equities rally, bonds have sold off, or when equities are weak, bonds have rallied. So big institutional investors around the world have used that sort of negative correlation between bond and equity prices to build their portfolios. They've assumed this will continue. that's enabled them to have much bigger equity holdings for the level of risk because bonds gave protection. If inflation takes off, and as I sort of talked about earlier, I think with this sort of workforce issue, there is a lot more of a chance of that, that we will see, in my view, more months like January where they sell off together or conversely in good markets can rally together. That means that the big institutional portfolios are actually riskier than they think, and that the consequences of that are two, or there's many, but two big ones are, one, you need less risk, which probably means owning less equities and less bonds. So that's obviously a negative for those markets. And there's going to be a much bigger search for sort of uncorrelated assets, which I think at least to start with will be the unlisted assets. So whether it's venture capital, whether it's infrastructure assets, whether it's gold, and so it goes on. So there's going to be a lot of people looking, and clearly everyone's looking for the same thing. So those assets are probably likely to get too expensive.
One thing that has become very expensive recently, of course, is oil prices. This morning, Brent crude, $96 a barrel. You know, do you expect renewable companies to minting money? But what we have seen is that it's actually the legacy energy producers like ExxonMobil who have been making record profits. Who's going to be the ultimate winner in the face-off between old and new energy, though?
I think clearly the whole new renewable energy, new energy, net zero is a huge debate. And I think it depends on the time period. So in the short term, clearly prices are very high, that the markets are telling the fossil fuel companies, you can't reinvest or you can't reinvest very much. So they're not doing the capex in the past. So the amount of cash flow being thrown off by, for example, oil companies is just huge. So you'd expect really high dividends the next few years. But it's at the same time that they're really running down their reserves. So that's a shorter term. Clearly, in the longer term, renewables are the future, that that regulation is pushing people that way, investors are pushing everyone that way, that we can see there's huge demand for renewables, which is clearly a good place to invest normally. The issue is that technology is changing really quickly and the price of renewables are falling, say 10% per annum every year, and that, you know, environment of investing in long-lived assets whose prices are falling is normally a very dangerous place to invest because the new capacity is cheaper than you've got. Particularly, so that's particularly the case when demand is not strong, but in the renewables case, we've got the strong demand and the falling prices. So it means it's an area where there are huge investments. In the long term, clearly there's going to be the bulk of our energy is going to be renewables, in my view. But investing there needs a lot of skill and a lot of caution, and not just buying the theme, but really understanding each individual project, each individual company, how long are the agreements they have for offtake, etc. So a really important area. I'm convinced there's going to be massive investment here. But the other interesting way that we've tended to play this is looking at the suppliers. So is it the lithium? Is it the copper? At what part of the supply chain do you want to, the manufacturers of the solar panels, for example, in China, what part of the supply chain do you want to invest in?
Robert, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning. That was Robert Mann, Head of Asian Equities at Nikko Asset Management, talking to us about the trends that could be moving markets in the weeks and months to come. Capping the conversation there with a look at the renewable energy sector and the opportunities that are there. It does take a lot of we should go in with eyes open and to see where the opportunities are in any case.
Because if you look at the S&P Clean Energy Index and you look at it actually from 2021, you would think that with so much focus on renewable energy, the index is up. Actually, it's not. It's actually down 30%. So there has been some profit taking, partially because in 2020 and even before that, renewable energy stocks really rallied. So there's a bit more of a step back in thinking who in this value chain is really going to be the winner, which is exactly what Robert is talking about. But I think, it's going to be extremely volatile times ahead for markets. The geopolitical risk, markets are just beginning to price that in. And even though the US closed down, it was much lower actually in the middle of the day of their trading day. So even in Asia here, we're looking at the futures is indicating for markets to open weaker across the board. High oil prices are not going to help, especially for a lot of Asian countries because they tend to be net energy importers. But it doesn't seem to stop companies from fundraising, because according to news, Volkswagen is planning an IPO.
That's right. And this is in line with the renewable energy theme, sort of, because they're looking to IPO their most profitable asset, which is Porsche, in an effort to boost the parent company's valuation and to fund the push into electric vehicles. I admit, I did not know that Volkswagen owned Porsche.
Oh, you didn't?
So that's something new that I learned today.
They own like 12 brands or something like that, a lot of brands. Now, Audi is one brand, for example. So the IPO code, I love this, is Phoenix. But, you know, Phoenix is a mythical bird. So let's hope this IPO is not a mythical thing. It does really happen. And a framework has been sketched out by the billionaire Porsche and Pike family. Did I get their name right? Because it's a bit more convoluted in terms of the corporate structure within VW. So the tentative IPO is expected to have value the sports car company at 85 billion euros. And this is according to Bloomberg Intelligence. And it could happen as soon as in the second half of this year.
85 billion euros, that's 96 billion US dollars. But to do so, to do this IPO, there's going to be a lot of balancing acts that need to be done because the owner family of Volkswagen, the German state of Lower Saxony, and Qatar together control about 90% of voting rights. So they'll need to walk a tightrope with these key shareholders to figure out what kind of arrangement to come to at the end.
And why are they doing this? Well, basically, they want to raise funds so that VW can actually focus on electric vehicles. We already heard news that Daimler Chrysler is moving, I think, eventually to only making EVs, a pledge that actually Volvo has already done, if I'm not wrong, by 2030. So increasingly, companies need the money for the R&D to move into electric vehicles. It's no choice.
That's
Everybody's
right.
Heading into net neutral carbon emissions by a certain date.
It's the next hot thing, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.